All right. Out of Canada, the Samba Squad, a world music fusion group with Bateria. It's from their 2006 album, Batuque. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. This is where we get together to voice our opinions about whatever it is you think is worth exploring a little bit more deeply, or certainly giving your take on it. And that could range from here to there. Whatever it is you want to talk about, it's your call today. 888-874-4888 is the number to call and get things started. What's, in your view, what's the big story that you think requires further analysis? What are we missing out on today? As you know, or you may not know, I don't know. Today is a big day in terms of the United States and trade with China. Talks have ended, and not well, because the United States, President Trump, has decided to impose unbelievable tariffs on goods coming from China, raising the tariffs from 10% to 25% on hundreds of millions of dollars in trade. It's, of course, going to have an effect all over the world. It's going to affect economies all over the world. And it is yet another example, I think, of how this country under Donald Trump is doing business. President Trump seems to have full sway in what he chooses to do as a lone ranger. He's doing things on his own. You don't see any attempt at all to include Congress, to include anybody else, and it's like this is his private deal. And what is mind-boggling to me is that these erratic behaviors, these crazy moves that the president has made and continues to make, nobody's saying anything really. They're just letting this go and giving him full rein to do whatever it is he wants to do. I guarantee you, it will not go well, and the country will suffer, not just specifically with regard to trade with China, but with regard to trade in the entire community of nations. This is not the way to do business. Of course, people say, well, what do you know about trade? You don't have to know anything about trade to know when people are behaving erratically. My father was in business. My mother was in business. They each had several businesses of their own. And I grew up in a household that is very business-minded. This is a classic example of what not to do. Even as an individual entrepreneur, you'd be careful about making dumb decisions like this, acting like a gangster on the world stage. And it is mind-boggling, but of course, we have seen this kind of thing before, where people acting on their own and at the same time claiming to represent the interest of their countries do bizarre things, and they're given free rein by people who swear they're very logical, they're very fair-minded, they're obeying the law or custom. This is not happening. So we have a very dangerous situation today. It is not just about the United States and China ending trade talks, at least for the moment, but it is very much the conduct of the President of the United States, presuming that he has full authority to call the shots on his own, regardless of what the fallout might be for the nation. And we see no evidence of any intervening force or influence to say, look, we really have to think about this. We cannot do this way. If you have a disagreement with China or you think you want to revise trade agreements with China, there's a whole other way to do it. And that is the way by custom that the rest of the world does it, including the United States. That's how the US used to do business. You settled trade agreements, and you settle disgruntlement if people are disgruntled, if countries are disgruntled with the terms of any agreement, there's a way to deal with that. You don't just end talks and send the Chinese representative home in a kind of disgrace that you've humiliated him. I swear to you, we are going to reap the we're going to reap the results of this erratic and unusual and, in my view, just intolerable behavior by the President of the United States. And as Americans, we should be very, very outraged by the way the president has behaved today, basically putting all Americans at risk, and doing so intentionally to humiliate China, and doing so intentionally to affirm his so-called leadership and his right to make certain decisions. It's going to bite us in the butt. Julie from New York, you start us off today. Hello, Julie. Okay, Julie's not there. Jay from New York, you start us off today.
I was here.
Oh, okay, Julie. I'm sorry, but I called and I didn't hear an answer. All right.
I said New York out of habit, but I'm still in Washington at the embassy.
Oh, how's it going?
Oh, well, we've had some difficulties
First of
here.
all, Judy, tell us why you there in, when you say you here in Washington, tell us where you are and why you're there.
We're at the Venezuelan embassy here. We are here in solidarity with the people of Venezuela. We want to hold this embassy until they appoint an official protectorate for it, because the people, the Guaido people, want to take over, and we're here to support the legitimate government that was elected in Venezuela. President Maduro received 6 million votes, and he is the legitimate president. So the Guaido people do not have a right to come in here. And this country is supposed, based on the Vienna Conventions, they're supposed to appoint a protectorate. And we've been here since April 10th. I've been here since April 27th. But the protective, the Embassy Protective Collective came here on April 10th. So we've been here, they've been here a month.
Now let's talk about who are the Guaido people. Of course, you're referring to the self-appointed new president, supported by the United States and several other countries, as the new president of Venezuela. And recently, he was heading up, or he had headed up, a kind of insurrection that fell flat. But still, he believes that he is the rightful president of Venezuela.
Yes, he appointed himself, but he is not, in fact, the president. So that is why we are here. The Code Pink and Popular Resistance initiated this Embassy Protection Collective, and we are here to see that the law is upheld and that they follow the Vienna Convention. But, and we thought that after the coup, at least I was so naive as to think that once the coup failed, that we would just stay here until they appoint a protectorate from another country who has an embassy here. But that didn't happen. The opposition people, after that coup failed, which was their third attempt at a coup, they want to come here and seize this building in Washington because it's, you know, it's very high profile. It's a four-story building here in Georgetown, and they want to come. They sent the opposition here after the coup. So everything had been going along fine until last Tuesday. That was the last day I went out of the building, out of the area. But then they showed up on Wednesday, and since then we have been, they surrounded the building and in such a way that they would never have allowed this for any other embassy. There, if any of the listeners have been looking at the websites that I gave last week, they'll see tents all around the building. They've literally allowed the opposition to put tents around the building, and we've not been able to go in or out freely since that time. And we've had two break-ins, but the police are really on the side of the opposition. I mean, if anyone has watched and they saw the president of the Veterans for Peace the other day, was actually the Secret Service just pounced on him as though he were a criminal, and he was trying to throw us up cucumbers, and they were trying to deliver food to us, and they've not permitted us to ingress and egress the way we had before. They've not even allowed us to collect the mail. Last Sunday, I took a video of the post office trying to deliver a priority package, and they won't allow us. So they've surrounded us, and the Secret Service are on their side and not ours, which is pretty, you know, I've heard about these kinds of things, but I've never experienced it. But I actually took a picture yesterday of the Veterans for Peace person that the Secret Service pounced on as though he were committing a crime, and he was just throwing up cucumbers to us. So it's,
I wanted to ask about that. The building that you're referring to, not technically, is a diplomatic building, supposedly covered by international law, and supposedly still is under the ownership of the government of Venezuela. But what has happened to the building? You still see forces loyal to Guaido being allowed, with U.S. permission, to disregard international law and basically try to seize the building, even though there are people occupying the building, people who are trying to protect the building from intrusion by any U.S. forces or any other forces except the Venezuelan forces. Now, what is happening to Venezuela's forces? Why are they not being allowed access to the building?
Well, they were ordered out of the country as of April 25th. They had to leave. There are two people that are U.S. citizens that were named, and of course, and I actually have the official paper of that. I made a copy of it, but our country, but the United States is just ignoring that. Their people that were in this building were ordered to leave by April 25th. So that's when, that was their last day that they were allowed here. So they've all left the country.
Yes, and that's under what is specific in the order that gives, according to the United States, that gives the U.S. authority to clear a building that is under, presumably, under international law, a building owned, if you will, by the government of Venezuela, which still is the legal government of the country.
It is, but the Trump administration made that order. And that's when they severed diplomatic relations. But according to the Vienna Convention, even if you sever diplomatic relations, they have an obligation to protect the property of the Venezuelan government here in Georgetown.
So where are things going, even though it appears that things have stood still, but in fact there's a lot of activity going on? Where are things headed, in your view?
Well, you know, they cut off our electricity Wednesday night, so things have, what already was difficult has become more difficult. But we weren't totally unprepared for that, because we have people here that have been to Venezuela that were there when the United States turned off their power grid. So we had that somewhat in mind, that they may try to do that, and Wednesday night they did. So we have not had power since Wednesday night, and they hope to starve us out. And and with the electricity off, we're certain that was done by the State Department, because individuals could not have done that, and we have verified that the Venezuelan government paid the bill. So it's not as though they turned it off because the bill had not been paid. So we're here now without the power, but we're hanging in here. They will have to take us out. We're not going to starve. They're hoping that we will starve, but the same way that the United States affected cut off their electric grid, and because of the sanctions, a lot of the people there are hungry. And they're trying to do the same thing to us here, except this is our government doing this to us, trying to starve us out here in Washington, D.C. So it even though it's made it much more difficult, we feel a greater urge to resist in solidarity and resolve with the people of Venezuela, because we're going through what they've been through, and what and if a war starts, it will be far worse for them than for us. We do have a choice. We don't have to be here. But the group that's here now feel more determined than ever to stay here.
What kind of support are you getting, and how important is it, or has it been, to just doing what it is you set out to do as a group?
Well, it's, you know, the collective is, you know, there are numerous members. I only mentioned Code Pink and Popular Resistance and Answer Coalition, Black Alliance for Peace. We have many, many supporters on the outside, and they have been here every day. One night they even stayed until 11 o'clock, the night that the power was turned off. So we lit candles in the window, and they went and got candles, the kind that you don't, I don't know what you call them, the little solar candles out front. So they have been tremendous. Marty Goodman from Socialist Action in New York came over. It was good for me to have somebody out there from New York, and he found it unbelievable. He was there the day the Veterans for Peace president was attacked. So we've had a lot of support, and we know they're working on this outside. It's just that they're out there every day. Ann Wright showed up today, and Medea Benjamin's out there. Because she was never able to get back in. So fortunately, we do have people out there working to do what they can to alleviate the situation. And now we really have to depend on them, because we're limited. I only had 40% left on my phone, and I saved that to call in today, since I was able to call in. I haven't been able to listen every day, but I knew that you would have Free Your Mind Friday, so I saved that 40% on my phone. So we're reaching out. They're doing the best that they can to reach out to officials, and of course, the only presidential candidate that that speaks about wars, that understands what we're really fighting, is Tulsi Gabbard, and we did reach out to her, but that hasn't been resolved. But we're getting a lot of alternative media, so for people that are interested, you have to look to the alternative media, because I don't think they're reporting this in any of the major papers.
You anticipated my next question, which was, how can people have
My pardon?
How can people help?
People can help by spreading the word. Because a lot of people don't know the situation, or they know portions and not others. So by looking at the Embassy Collective there is a Facebook page for the collective, which is called the Embassy Protection Collective. So if you go there or to the Code Pink website, they will, they're trying to publicize our need and to get as many people here. They're planning to do rallies each day from 6 to 8 here in front of the building, which they've been doing on a smaller scale, but they're really reaching out now to try to get people, to get more people here to have a greater presence. But if you can spread the word outside to... we've done Twitters, to elected officials, and we're reaching out all as much as we can here. But if you go to those websites, there might be other specific contacts that they're asking people to make. But anybody that could come over, last week we had a good showing from New Jersey of support. The Green Party was here, so was Veterans for Peace have been here every day. So that's at this point, it's just the pressure is the most important.
Thank you, Julie, for being with us. I don't want you to use up too much more of your 40% charge on your phone. Yeah. But thank you so much for this update.
Okay.
And we'll be in touch, of course. Thank you. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
You tweet, how are you doing? How are you feeling?
Okay, thanks. How about
good.
You?
I'm doing good. Looking forward to every day, Monday through Friday at 1 p.m. to hear your lovely voice and excellent insight to world events and what's going on.
Thank you. I hope to see you on the 26th at
No, I won't be able
Church.
To make it. I'll be out of town. But we will do it at some point. But we've met before,
okay.
So it's,
I know.
It's all good.
So what I wanted to say to you
was this. In regards to this tariff situation with China, I don't understand, honestly, Utrice, why the Congress and the Senate isn't saying anything about it. Because what it has shown so far, which I don't think the media has really talked about, is what has happened with the farmers who supply soybeans. And how this president has to have given them billions of dollars. And now he's saying that the money that we're so-called going to receive, he's going to now give that to farmers. That don't sound too right to me. That sounds like welfare to you.
It's not only that, it sounds gangsterish. We cannot have, and I don't know how it happened. I understand that countries, the U.S. has engaged with other countries in matters of trade, and that's understood. That's a global phenomenon where countries trade with each other, fine. But it seems to me that we ought to have some kind of input from Congress overseeing all trade deals with any country and the conduct of the United States in negotiating these deals and in executing these deals. We don't seem to have that. It may be the case that we do, and nobody's talking, but we don't seem to have a constant monitoring of the president and his office and the people who are supposedly in charge of trade. We seem to have very little oversight as to what is happening. This, in fact, proves it. The fact that, as of today, a very unceremonious end to trade talks and intolerable by international standards, where you have another, you know, major country of the world, a superpower, in fact, having to go home empty-handed and at the behest, essentially, of the United States, saying, we're not trading anymore, all bets are off. This is not consistent with trade policy and practice.
Well, it seems like he has, or he feels he has the ability to do whatever he wishes to do in the United States, like a gangster. He acts and behaves like a gangster, if you really think about it. And, you know, the thing that annoys me the most is that it seems nobody is putting him in a position to be shut down. And then it amazes me. I don't think any other president in our history would have been allowed to get away with the things that he's getting away with. I just don't, it boggles my mind. I know Bush couldn't do it. I know Obama definitely couldn't do it. Carter, nobody. Clinton, nobody. It's like they seem to be utterly afraid of this man to even deal with the impeachment issue. I mean, even though I don't support impeachment, but the point of the matter is there needs to be something in place to challenge him, to get him in line, to not only behave like a decent human being, but then to behave in the position that he is, as one would say, presidential. This is madness. I've never seen, I know people from other countries that I've spoken to that are astonished by this guy. They don't even believe it. But you know something, a friend of mine in Brazil, we were talking on Skype the other day, and he was saying that the new president that they have is the same type of joker. He's the same type of a joker, but maybe just as bad and more dangerous because their government doesn't have the type of checks and balances like we have here. And we were going back and forward in the conversation, and man, he was amazed by America. I wasn't amazed by Brazil because I really haven't followed it, but I was amazed by America in the response. So I don't know what we're going to do, Utrecht, because it don't seem this is getting any better. This seems to me like it's getting worse. And
but again, you're absolutely right. The question is, what is Congress doing or able to do to function as it was mandated to do, which is to be part of the system of checks and balances, so that we do not have a runaway, renegade president doing whatever it is he wants to do, regardless of the consequences. So I look at that, and I agree with you.
Is the American people, and when I talk about the Congress and the Senate and the judicial, are they scared of him? Because it's like, he's the type of person to where it seems to me that he just does whatever he wants and he doesn't care about the consequences and what's going to happen, because after all these years he's been in the public atmosphere and the way he's run his business by shortchanging people, having people taking them to court, riding them out, and all of these things, he's like using that same playbook with the American people by taking the American government to court, you know, doing these type of things, getting caught up in a system to where it'll take 6 months or longer for it to come to fruition, to get a decision and all of these things. And it's like, this is how he acts and behaves, because there's no immediate consequences for his behavior. And to see us as a country get caught up in this type of behavior, and there's no leadership to address and deal with this type of behavior from him, it's really, really scary if you think about it.
Well, it is scary, but again, your point is well taken. We look to the leadership to take a very active role here in monitoring and controlling, to whatever extent that they can, and they can, the conduct of the president, especially in the world community of nations. We don't see that happening. And therefore, the question is, what then is our responsibility, the responsibility of the people? How do we make our concerns known? And they are quite legitimate, because you can expect that China will retaliate, which means that the economy of the United States will be affected, which means that people will suffer. So,
well, I'll just leave you with this. We're heading into a real slippy slope of dangerous, not only policies, but dangerous practices. And when it's all said and done, and this is my biggest concern, when he leaves office, it's going to be our grandkids and kids that are going to suffer from what he's done, and he'll be dead and gone. And that's the tragedy in all of this. Because, see, we're not going to suffer too much for the next couple of years, but it's going to be the years that follow that's going to cause all of these type of problems. And the way that our economic system is, and the way that our family structure and society is, you're looking at a situation where there's going to be dire consequences in this country between the haves and the have-nots. And I don't think we realize it. So I hope people are preparing for 10, 15 years from now, and they're placing their children in a position to be able to survive. And look, Utrice, have a beautiful weekend, and it's a privilege to speak with you every Friday and to hear your beautiful voice Monday through Friday. Take care, my sister.
Thank you. Thanks so much for calling in and sharing your thoughts. Moki from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Greetings. Greetings, Utrice.
Greetings to you. What's on your mind today that you're willing to free?
Well, I want to ask you, are the stitches dissolving yet?
Yes, they've begun to dissolve.
Great. And because of your inner
quite
beauty.
Quite a stubborn ones.
What's that?
But I have quite a few stubborn ones that just don't want to go.
They're not as stubborn as you are. You will overcome those holdouts.
So let's get to your thoughts today. What's on your mind?
Okay. I've got a question, because I get all my news filtered through the most brilliant minds in the world, and that's PRN. I heard a week ago, and I've been wanting to ask this question since then, that the presider, the self-poisoning Diet Coke drinking presider who would be dictator, vetoed Congress's bill to pull out of Yemen. So my question, Professor, is, has Congress begun the proceedings to override his veto?
I don't think so, not on this issue. I think they're waiting for some kind of further talks, as they want to say, whenever a situation like this arises, and they haven't done or cannot do anything to override the president's veto. This is why we ought to be concerned about what's going on with the entire governing apparatus in this country as a whole. it is not government by the people for the people. It's government by against the people, government despite the people, government to spite the people. And we're well on our way to that kind of authoritarian attitude, even by people who use other words to describe themselves, like Democrats, like Republicans, conservatives, even liberals and progressives. Everybody seems to be behaving in a manner that would raise serious questions when compared to how originally they saw themselves functioning as part of a checks and balances system in this country. But everybody's acting like a renegade. I don't understand it. I guess the feeling is if you can't win them, join them, you know, or join them with a little hedge that you can claim still reflects your political principles, if you have any. But I don't see that there is a consciousness, not from those, not from that sphere, but more importantly, from the people. We are inert. We're not activated at all in opposition to these things which literally affect us at ground level. And that concerns me.
The legislature is counting on our inertness. My question was really kind of rhetorical. I think Congress feels like they're off the hook now. Let me remind you in the audience that FDR said that nothing happens in politics that is not meant to. And so I think Congress said, oh, well, we tried. We tried to end the war in Yemen. We tried to stop support for them and the blockade and the refueling. Now we're off the hook because the president nixed it. So what do we do? What do we do with a legislature like this? I say we fire them all. I say we have the power, the ability, and the right to fire the president now and Congress now. Why wait for midterms or anything like that? And you say, how? I say through petition and public referendum, activism. Because, yeah, Congress isn't going to do anything. It's kabuki theater. And that goes for the, according to Gerald Celente of Trends Journal and Occupy Peace, the trade wars are a deception. They're BS. They're kabuki theater. Trump wants a good economy. He wants to be reelected.
Well, this is a question. It ultimately comes to us. It comes down to that level. It's a seminal level. It is where all things start, I think, in terms of how do you run a society that lives up to the idea, notion of peace and prosperity and fairness and justice and all these high ideals that we so revere. But we are not really putting muscle behind those things. We're not. Mm-hmm. They're compared to the people, the millions and millions of people who say they value certain ideals. You don't see the translation of that when you're looking for shoes, in the street. There's mm-hmm. nothing happening.
No.
To the extent that, here we just finished talking to Julie at the Venezuelan embassy in Washington, D.C. Now, one would believe, these are just private citizens, these are just regular people, literally taking it upon themselves to illustrate the egregious actions being taken against Venezuela, and they literally putting themselves on the line for it. We don't see that around the country as a whole, not just specific to that situation, But I'm talking about in situations that raise the question over and over again about what do we have here? Do we have any citizen power? Do we really believe that we have that kind of power? Are we dedicated to using the power that we have to make things right or better? There's a loss, a noticeable loss, and fewer and fewer people are signing up for duty that they used to take such great pride in basically being the unseen hand in all of this is the hand of the people ameliorating circumstances that are outrageous and unjust and wrong. But I've seen a fallout here of that. We're seeing a diminution of the soldiers in battle. And yet they talk all the time about doing battle, but the bodies are just not there. So we always are wondering, what does it take? What will it take for people to wake up and understand that it is not about the government versus the people? The people also are the government. And we have to assert and affirm our role in this society, which we very proudly boast as a democratic one. We're falling down on the job and leaving it to others. But we certainly have absented ourselves.
The people have been deluded and distracted and intimidated. What I pray is that the people behind the Embassy Protection Collective, the people involved with this and supporting this, I pray that, like, I see them as an irritant in the big clamshell of the machine, of the military-industrial complex, and I pray that that irritant becomes a pearl with that people rally around this issue. This isn't Standing Rock, North Dakota. This is Washington, D.C. And so you're absolutely right. People have to coalesce around the righteous issues and the correct. Not that they already haven't, and not that this issue, not that this movement won't be compromised as all the others have in some way, but we can't stop. We have to keep trying, poking at the machine and resisting wherever we can. And with that, I'll say stay in good health, because that's the first line of resistance.
That's right. That's what you have to do. Thanks a lot, Moki, for your call today. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello. Hello, fantastic, Yatrice.
Hey, wonderful Harvey.
Hi there.
How are you doing?
Very good. Well, it turns out that we generate a lot of electricity using fossil fuels like coal, oil, nuclear, and methane to light our cities and towns, as well as roads, highways, and infrastructure at night. And being a solar energy advocate, I have an idea to avoid burning a vast amount of fossil fuels by using fiber optic cables to help light our world. And fiber optic cables are made from thin strands of pure glass that are bundled together to create cables that are buried underground or strung on poles to carry information using laser pulses. And companies like AT&T and Google use fiber optic undersea cables to carry telephone and computer information around the world. So my idea is to collect large amounts of sunlight using huge sunlight collecting dishes, similar to radar dishes, large radar dishes. And when these huge sunlight collecting dishes are pointed toward the sun, they bring the sunlight to a concentrated focal point, which is where the concentrated sunlight is channeled into bundles of fiber optic cables. And large fiber optic cables under the ocean would be used to carry the concentrated sunlight to parts of the world that are experiencing night, that are facing the sun during the day and collecting sunlight. And it would be transferred to parts of the world that are experiencing nighttime. For example, when it's daytime in Asia or Europe, Africa or Russia, the sunlight is collected and sent via fiber optic ocean cables to North and Mid and South America to light our continent's infrastructure at night, like street lighting. And as our world revolves and we experience daytime, we can use the same system to send daylight to Asia, Africa, Europe, and Russia, who are in the dark, of night, to light their infrastructure. So it would be a system, basically, as the world turns, one part of the world that's in daylight lights the world in nighttime, and it just keeps going around, and then the other opposite happens. So it would be a steady state, solid state system to light, to bring light to our world and reduce our burning of fossil fuels.
I mean, it's a great idea, and it's quite innovative. It sounds very innovative. But we just finished talking about what's happening in Washington, D.C., governments making power grabs all over the world, this United States government being at the top of the list in many ways. How do you prevent a great idea like this becoming yet another weapon in the arsenal of powerful nations to dominate and rule the less powerful nations?
Well, first of all, take Venezuela. The big thing about Venezuela is it has one of the largest oil reserves on the planet. So, you know, our system wants to try to make sure that, say, the Chinese or the Russians don't have the access to the oil. But it's all about, we need that oil to essentially power our power plants. We burn the oil, and that produces electricity to run, you know, the lighting of our world. And so if we can just use the technology that we have, everything I said is available today, off-the-shelf technology, I think it would help to bring peace to our planet while reducing, like the Trump administration, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of the fossil fuel industry. It would reduce their power because we would be getting our power from the sun instead of digging it up and burning it into the air and raising the heat of the planet, which is causing our polar caps to melt. And that's the real enemy. It's sure, we're always at war with each other, we're always at each other's throats, but the real enemy to all of us worldwide is the threat to Mother Earth and what we're doing to her by burning all these fossil fuels. So this would be a way to tap into the ultimate nuclear reactor, our sun, and generate clean, renewable electricity to power our world, and we'd all benefit as the world turns.
Well, it sounds, in concept, it's a great idea. I'm wondering whether it is already being anticipated how a good idea very easily becomes a weapon of domination, of war, control, global control, in the hands of nations that are not committed to behaving in democratic fashion. You know, one of the biggest developments in the world of oil, for example, is Guyana. Guyana will be, if it isn't already almost there, the largest oil-producing nation in the world. They just discovered new deposits of oil in Guyana, making it the most powerful nation in the world. It's so ironic because Guyana, as you know, is a very poor country. But you look at something like this, a burgeoning issue that would bring great news if properly handled to the people of Guyana and the world. But it is not going to happen, is it? Because even as I speak, there are entities being formed to make it so that Guyana will be deprived of this one big break that they have with oil production. And the question, even now, without any formal organization being formed is who is going to control the power of this oil, and what will become of it? How do you harness and direct the inherent power of something so precious that could lift all these boats around the world that have been sinking under crushing economic deprivation and so forth? And here's an opportunity to begin to anticipate a turnaround. And already you can hear the words in behind closed doors about who is going to plunder and cause all kinds of warlike things to happen, just with the knowledge that Guyana now will be the leading world power in oil production. Now, well, what do you say to that?
Well, my idea is the same thing like what's happening here with a guaranteed national income, where the robots are going to, and artificial intelligence are going to take over so many of the jobs, so they're going to give the people a national guaranteed income of $1,000 or $2,000 a month to help them pay the rent and offset the stress caused by not being able to pay their bills. Well, maybe we can apply the same system to countries who have an excess of oil. We can actually pay them to keep it in the ground and offer incentive programs, because if we are tapping into the sun, which is a renewable resource to all of us, we can generate a lot of income, which we can use some of that disposable income to pay countries to leave the fossil fuels in the ground. In other words, they won't make their money by digging up the fossil fuels. They'll make their money by letting it stay in the ground. And also, oil is used in a number of commodities. It's not just burnt as a fuel. So the oil does have value in other ways. So maybe they won't be digging it up and burning it up as much as they would, but they can still take a certain amount of it for the generation of other. It's used in pharmaceuticals, it's used in farming, it's used in industry, so it doesn't have to be burnt into the air. So I say, let's pay these countries for not digging up the fossil fuels, leaving it in the ground, and then they can use that money to become wealthy in their own ways through agriculture and other means.
Well, thank you, Harvey. Great to hear from you. Thanks a lot for your call today.
Thank you, too.
Thanks. We've come to the ending of our program today, but I do want to emphasize this meeting that I'm hoping will be a great one, one of a great sense of community and finding our way to each other. That is May the 26th at 1 p.m. at the Community Church. I've been asked by the Global Affairs Committee of the Community Church to come back. I was there last year, to come back and deliver a talk. And that's what I would do. I'm so honored to have been asked. And it is going to be at 1 o'clock on Sunday, May the 26th. The church is located at 40 East 35th Street in Manhattan. That's between Madison Avenue and Park Avenue. And I'm going to be so excited to see your face, to put the face with the voice, and to have great communion, pardon the pun, at the church. It is not a religious event. It is just a wonderful way to meet each other. And I talk all the time on this program about building community. That's one of the best safeguards that we have, that we can continue to build as a source of protection, actually, for our community, and trading ideas, talking to people we previously did not know or hadn't met. And just one meeting could start a lot of change. So I'm looking forward to it. And I hope to see you. Bring a friend or 10. We'll have room. And we will have a good time a very, very productive meeting, I'm hoping. And I'm just so delighted. I'm just so delighted and full of expectation that we will have a great time, meaning an opportunity to meet with each other and to meet others and to begin the process of building your own version of community. That would be great. So thank you so much for listening today and for contributing. This is important. What I mean by that is that we have to be purposeful, you know, and one of the best resources that we have, I think we continue to ignore or we undervalue, and that is the resources we have as a group. We should maximize the teaching of each other, reaching each other, strengthening our bonds so that in turn we strengthen our communities. This is seminal work of building literally from the ground up. We don't have to make a big thing about it, but it is a big thing. It is not being done anymore. It's kind of out of fashion. But isn't it, in fact, miraculous that a person in, say, New York City, undergoing a particular experience, can see help coming from San Francisco? That's the way we ought to be. So I thank you. It's the weekend. Surround yourselves with people who bring good things into your life. And we see each other on Monday. Bye-bye.